Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual, and all of them relate to Tuesday night's presidential debate on Fox Business Network. The first martini, the good martini, Ian, is really a two-headed good martini because one part flows into the other. Kudos to the moderators in both debates. Very good, substantive, non-snarky questions that actually focused on the economy. So lessons were apparently either learned from CNBC or these professionals actually knew what they were doing from the get-go. And as a result of good questions that led to substantive conversations, we got exchanges like this between Marco Rubio and Rand Paul on military spending. Here is Rubio first.
We can't even have an economy if we're not safe. There are radical jihadists in the Middle East beheading people and crucifying Christians. A radical Shia cleric in Iran trying to get a nuclear weapon. The Chinese taking over the South China Sea. Yes, I believe the world is a safer... I know that the world is a safer and better place when America is the strongest military power in the world.
I do not think we are any safer from bankruptcy court. As we go further and further into debt, we become less and less safe. This is the most important thing we're going to talk about tonight. Can you be a conservative and be liberal on military spending? Can you be for unlimited military spending and say, oh, I'm going to make the country safe? No, we need a safe country. But you know, we spend more on our military than the next 10 countries combined. I want a strong national defense, but I don't want us to be bankrupt.
And so, Ian, you know Neil Cavuto, Maria Bartiromo, and Gerard Baker did a good job because this morning we're talking about good exchanges like that and several others rather than the sniping from the moderators and the candidates.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is how a debate should be run. All three moderators did a good job. There were a couple moments where they seemed on the verge of losing control. And once Trump stepped in, once Fiorina stepped in and sort of took the reins, but really they did a great job of facilitating good substantive exchanges by asking straightforward, no-nonsense policy questions. And the candidates, most of them, responded in turn. I think that exchange is a good example. There was a good exchange between, I believe it was Cruz and Kasich talking about the economy. There were just a bunch of good moments. And one of the things that's amusing is if you were following along on Twitter last night, as those of us in the media are cursed to do, there were a number of people complaining, a number of media folks complaining about, oh, how boring this debate was. There were no fireworks. Well, that's okay. Instead of easy headlines or sound bites, we got some of these more substantive exchanges, and that makes it harder to snark on Twitter. But it gave us a little better glimpse of the candidates. They were able to act as foils to one another and show a little more clearly than we've seen to date some of the fault lines that exist among the candidates, and that's a good thing.
With just about every candidate, you can think of a specific policy position they passionately articulated on Tuesday night, whereas the other three debates combined, I don't think you could come up with as many moments if you thought hard about it.
So, that's about right.
Also
yeah.
A good sign. So either these moderators are very special and can do something that not many others can do, including their own Fox News Channel colleagues. I thought they did much better than even their colleagues at Fox News did in that first debate. Either they're very special or other people just aren't getting how simple this needs to be. I think simplicity is bliss from their perspective.
One thing that's important is, I mean, A, the bar was low after CNBC.
Right.
But there's also the question of whether the candidates trust the moderators going in. They didn't trust the CNBC moderators. There was a whole lot of pushback against John Harwood being there. So I think a lot of the candidates bristled going into the debate. If they know going in that they're likely to get a fair shake from the moderators, they're likely to be a little more relaxed and more substantive. And that was certainly the case last night, I think.
And as we shift to the bad martini, when there is 2 hours of decent, solid substance, you can kind of see who has command of policy details and who needs to do a little more boning up on some of these things. And one issue that this appeared on, dealt with Trans-Pacific trade and the huge agreement that no one's actually read yet. And Donald Trump is right about that. But Trump made a point that Rand Paul was quick to jump on.
The TPP is a horrible deal. It is a deal that is going to lead to nothing but trouble. It's a deal that was designed for China to come in, as they always do, through the back door and totally take advantage of everyone. It's 5,600 pages long, so complex that nobody's read it.
Hey, Gerard, you know, we might want to point out China's not part of this deal.
Yeah. True. It's true.
And there are a couple of moments some folks thought Carson was lacking a little bit, too. And those are the two front runners. So if they do take a hit as a result of that, they've certainly got some time and some buffer to do better in the next encounter. Ian, when, in fact, there is 2 hours of substance, you better know your stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly right. This was kind of an astonishing moment. You could just you could see Rand Paul just relishing it, especially after a couple debates ago, Trump had said, you know, he shouldn't be on the stage. This was long overdue, long awaited payback. Your point's exactly right. And what becomes clear in these debates, it seems to me, the folks actively involved in the political scene are showing a deeper grasp of the in-the-weeds details versus Trump and Carson, particularly, who, when the conversation gets really into the details, tend to fade out. There were moments last night where you had these long tax reform exchanges between some of the senators, for instance, where you forgot that Trump and Carson were on the stage. These are telling moments. Now, that's not to say that this is a fait accompli when it comes to these candidates. Carly Fiorina has demonstrated a very strong grasp of policy details in certain areas, and she's able to articulate them. So this is certainly not an inevitable problem, but it's something that was, I think, on sharper display last night. And if we can get more debates like the one last night, it'll help voters see not just who has the best applause lines, who has some of the wittier comebacks, but also who, when they're asked a specific policy question, fumbles around and eventually comes up with a little bit of a vaguer speechifying. That was on display a couple of times last night, and voters need to be aware of that.
All right, on to the crazy martini now, and the name that probably came up the most in the post-debate Frank Luntz focus group was Ohio Governor John Kasich. And here's the thing that I think most viewers are going to remember about John Kasich from last night.
So he just mentioned my name.
Governor Bush.
Gerald, it was just
what happened to my question?
You're not going to have my back. I'm going to have my back. Let me say a couple things here. First of all,
you should let Jeb speak.
We have grown.
No, it's
unfair. In the state of Ohio.
Governor.
So he was jumping in a lot more than most people would like. When you're on the end, you probably don't get quite as many questions, and you figure like you have to jump in. But he seemed to jump in virtually on every question, and he didn't pick his spots, really. He just kind of went in like a bull in a china shop. But then there were questions he actually answered, which I think conservatives are going to have problems with, too, including this one on immigration.
If people think that we are going to ship 11 million people who are law-abiding, who are in this country, and somehow pick them up at their house and ship them out of Mexico to Mexico, think about the families. Think about the children. So, you know, the answer really is, if they've been law-abiding, they pay a penalty, they get to stay, we protect the wall, anybody else comes over, they go back. But for the 11 million people, come on, folks, we all know you can't pick them up and ship them back across the border. It's a silly argument. It's not an adult argument.
Not sure a lot of people got the idea that John Kasich would be real stiff when it came to future illegal immigrants with that answer, like he really was going to be serious about sending them back. And then he also had fairly non-conservative answers about the minimum wage and bailing out banks and some other things. So while he got a lot of airtime, I'm not sure it helped him.
We joked after the Democratic debate that Jim Webb was both frustratingly belligerent and possibly on the wrong stage. And there were moments of long stretches, I should say, last night when the same seemed to be true of John Kasich. And I Yeah, I don't want to offend any of our Ohio listeners who may have cast their vote for the good governor. But as a presidential candidate, he's full of very frustrating bluster. Going to the Frank Luntz focus groups, I forget what the specific question was, but Luntz said that Kasich had registered lower than anyone in the history of the focus groups that he'd been doing on a certain question, something like an 8-point rating or something like this. Look, it's a combination of two things. One is this idea, and Jeb has toyed with this a little bit. We talked about it Monday with the supposed attack on Rubio for being too pro-life. It's this idea that there's this wide swath of middle-of-the-road centrist Republicans voting in GOP primary elections that are looking for someone who sort of straddles the line between parties. And Kasich has tried to cast himself in that mold. It doesn't exist in the party right now, especially when it comes to these primary contests. So he's angling for voters that I just don't think are out there. And then he's showing his notorious temper, cutting in, becoming belligerent, not just with his fellow candidates, but with the moderators, who I think everyone would agree were trying to be reasonably equitable when it came to time, when it came to the questions they were asking across the board. He seems increasingly, it seems he's temperamentally unsuited for the position he's pursuing. It's also highlighted acutely by the contrast with Rubio and his sort of winning personality, and particularly when he's delivering his lines. Cruz, who's with his fluidity, and Fiorina and Carson too, with their just sort of native calm. All of those help point out the contrast with Kasich, and it's unflattering to him.
Ian, a fun night. It's always fun after a debate, and also fun to have you with us for the past 3 days. Thanks as always for filling in.
Absolutely. I hope to talk to you soon, Greg.
Absolutely. Ian Tuttle of National Review in for Jim Garrity. Jim will be back on Thursday. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Join us then for the next 3 Martini Lunch.